Ghosts, cryptids, murder, conspiracies, beer, what, the ale.
Hello, friends.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back to What the Ale. I'm Alana Ray.
And I'm Mama Jane.
And before we get into it, Mama, do you have any What the Ale moments this week? And what are you drinking?
Well, I just think my What the Ale moment is good stuff because we've had so much fun here in Denver and got to do a ghosty tour and got to tour, I'm going to call it the Margaret Brown House, which we will talk about. And then we got to see Brandi Carlile. So it's just been a lot of good, a lot of fun. And we also discovered a new female-run, queer-run brewery called Lady Justice. Mm-hmm. And so I'm drinking one of their, it's their amber, it's really delicious, and it's called Chosen Family.
I'm also having a Lady Justice beer, which is called Sandra Day, and all the names are really cute. There's one called Hop to Go, so go Chapel Roan. But yeah, definitely a super cute place.
Yeah, definitely. If you're in Denver, go there. The beers are delicious. The people are super nice. The space is cool. Like, yeah, definitely visit if you're in Denver.
Totally. Totally. Well, I guess in terms of what the ill moments I have, I will say that we went to a quote-unquote haunted piano bar, and it wasn't haunted, but it was a wild time.
Yeah.
People were just kind of sitting around the bar singing whatever they want, and it progressively got drunker as the night went on, but it was highly entertaining.
But it was lots of Broadway hits and then lots of other hits. It was super fun.
Yeah, and they sang, like, really cool songs. So yeah. I can't knock them for the songs they chose. So.
Yeah. Well, and then I was going to say, you know, because we did cover the Molly Brown House, but, you know, when we went and toured it and did the ghost tour, we found out that the name Molly was given to her because that was a derogatory term that was used for Irish women back in the day, and it only gained popularity from the movie The Unsinkable Molly Brown. Was it Unsinkable Molly Brown?
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously Titanic used it also, but everybody knew her as Margaret. Nobody called her Molly. So out of respect, you know, I just want to put that out there as new information, and I'm going to call her Margaret from now on because she was kind of a badass and did all kinds of good for her community and others. So anyways.
Yeah, I mean, and the only reason why they call it the Molly Brown House is because people wouldn't know her as Margaret Brown. Yeah. So that's the only reason why.
Because of the two movies. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, just keep that in mind, I guess. But the house is gorgeous.
Yeah. Very cool.
Love the property.
Love her story. Love the history. Love all the good work she did.
Yeah. She seems like a really cool, really cool human. So, yeah. Anyway, complete pivot, Mama, but are you ready to get into my story?
Yeah, I'm totally down.
All right, friends. So I decided to cover a cult this week. I don't know if any of you have seen the Escaping Twin Flames documentary on Netflix. I think it's absolutely bonkers. So I figured I would kind of give a little history of, like, what a twin flame is and, like, how it's been corrupted before we actually talk about the cult. So the roots of twin flames actually stem as far back as, like, ancient Greece.
Okay.
And there's this idea of original humans or light beings. And when they were, like, you know, they found their twin flame or whatever, they basically became these, like, balls of energy that were, like, trapped in flesh. And so the ascension process is the idea of leading the bodies back to light. And your whole twin flame journey is about ascending and returning to light. I mean, obviously it's about romance and love, but that's, like, just kind of a perk of it. And so I don't know if you have, like, really listened to the lyrics of The Origin of Love from Hedwig and the Angry Inch, but it's basically about this theory that, like, there are these beings that are kind of, like, glued together, and they have, like, four legs and four arms, and the gods were, like, they're too powerful and strong, so they were, like, we're gonna cut you in half. And so now all of the twins are, like, in anguish looking for their other twin, and that's how we get to, like, modern humans today.
Wow.
There also is some twin flames in Hindu mythology. And I guess it the main reference is Shiva and Shakti, which is a combination of both consciousness and energy. So there's a masculine and feminine force joining together. They wanted to stress that physical gender is not the same thing as a masculine and feminine force.
Well, and this one we know about because we have friends that have a painting that a friend did for them mm-hmm. that's hanging in their stairway that is this. And so they were the ones that explained this to me the first time. But it's a beautiful painting where, yeah, there's a masculine side and a feminine side. And it's, you know, bright colors. It's beautiful. But, yeah, that was the first time I had heard of it was this painting.
Yeah, yeah. So Shiva is often referred to as the Lord of Eternal Love, and Shakti is known as his eternal consort and bride. People also talk about Radha and Krishna, who are two deities following a path to divine love. People also say that the twin flames idea is in the Bible, not necessarily using the term, but the Bible has many references to twin flame relationships with the idea of a mirror soul. So, for example, from the book of Samuel, there's a quote that says, "As soon as he finished speaking to Saul, the soul of Jonathan was knit to the soul of David. Jonathan loved him as his own soul." And people, the person who wrote this was like, "I feel like Jesus and Mary Magdalene were twin flames, and obviously Adam and Eve were twin flames." So there are, like, these people... are these examples from different kind of historical contexts and religions. Yeah.
Also, Adam and Eve had no other options.
That's true. I do wonder if Eve would have picked Adam had had they not had an option. So yeah. I agree with you there. But yeah, so let's kind of get into the people who started the cult, and then we'll talk about what the cult is doing and the fact that it's still around today. So... the whole story really starts with Jeff and Shalia Ayan. But giving a little history on Jeff, he went to business school and it seemed like he wanted to be just an entrepreneur in general. He moved to Hawaii and changed his name to Ender Ionethos. I guess he wanted to have a more...
mystical name.
Mystical. Yeah, mystical is the right word for it. And he was promoting a travel and lifestyle brand. So he would just be like, "Here I am in Croatia. Look at me doing the things," and whatever. But then in 2012 and 2013, we're not really sure, he met Shalia online. They apparently talked online for hours. I think it was like 5 hours. And after their first call, he asked her to marry him.
Oh my gosh, that's a little fast for me.
You know, I'm all for like when you know, but that seems fast. Like, just to propose marriage right there.
Yeah.
Her name was actually Megan Plant, but she changed her name after a spiritual journey.
Okay.
And she was, like, into, like, tarot cards and stuff. It wasn't, like, as much of a, you know, whatever sort of situation. But anyway, they got married. They moved to Michigan. And he had a few websites that centered on spiritual awakening in general. There were, like, things like card readings or meditation, mindfulness, which doesn't seem like a bad thing when you think about it. But then he had a site that claimed he could cure things like cancer for a price. Like, he could teach you how to cure cancer through meditation. So clearly he has a bit of a God complex. And a lot of people who actually, like, got involved with the cult later said that they actually liked Shalia a lot more than Jeff because she seemed super open and welcoming to new people. But to get into the idea of what the twin flames was, they essentially wanted to teach people how to find their twin flame, like calling them into their lives. So to them, the twin flame is the ultimate lover. They're the most compatible human. They're your all. They had a book and classes for people to find their twin flames. There was also, like, a Facebook group with 38,000 people from around the world in it.
Oh, my gosh.
And they would give advice on how to pursue twin flames as well as, like, relationship advice once you found your twin flame. They really centered on this idea of the mirror exercise, which was, like, the ultimate way to connect with your, like, inner soul and find your twin flame. Which is basically you would, like, write out a sentence about what is bothering you. You would change it to have all the anger pointing at yourself. And then, you know, from there, you would kind of internalize that. But, and, like, in theory, like, yeah, it sounds like maybe it's okay. Yeah. So, like, you would be like, I'm frustrated that you kissed someone else. And then it would be like, you're frustrated that I kissed someone else. And you're supposed to, like, sit in their shoes and be like, oh, I see, well, like, why this is bad or good. But it gets not so good in other contexts, right? So, but, you know, Jeff and Shalia presented it as a way to heal. They wanted folks to find harmonious union. And they claimed that they had a special power to identify twin flames. So they claimed that, like, if you were part of their group, you read their books, you took their classes, they would tell you who your twin flame was.
That's a lot of trust you have to put in somebody to say this is your person and just, like, believe that and go along with it.
Yeah, and so it's a lot. I kind of did this weirdly. There were, like, I'm just going to kind of talk a little bit and then we'll go into, like, personal stories, I think, is the best way to do it. So it was mostly, like, an online group. People would, like, get the book or take the classes. And these classes were, like, thousands of dollars per class. And then eventually a couple of them were like, hey, let's all meet in New York. That'd be fun. And Jeff made it, like, a massive, like, official meetup where 50 people flew in from around the world and they stayed in Airbnbs together. And there were some people he paid to be there, who we'll talk about later. They were kind of like the poster children of the cult. But there also was, like, a second meeting in Toronto, and things like that. Like, he really was like, we need everybody to see that we're all okay. But in this sort of journey, he introduced the idea of a soul family, which was if you weren't in a relationship with people who supported your journey, they were a soul leak and you had to remove them from your life. So, like, say, like, your mom was like, hey, this sounds a little weird. I'm not sure how I feel about you spending, like, your entire life savings on this thing. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, well, they're a soul leak and you need to, like, heal them out of your life, which healing just means cutting them out of your life.
So isolating, basic abusive tactic, get you away from your support system, get away from people that might challenge their ideas. That seems like a very abusive thing, very culty thing, but yeah, it seems like you do need to, if they want to succeed, they do need to get you away from anybody that's going to challenge it.
Right. And so he also would, like, do one-on-one coaching sessions with people and convince them that they had been abused in their past by their families.
Oh my gosh.
And that would, like, fuel as, like, reasons to cut off the family.
Yeah.
Which is so fucked
that's
up in general.
Really fucked up. Oh my,
like,
gosh.
Like, the idea that you're sitting there, like, I can't imagine, like, someone trying to convince me that, like, my parent had been abusive, right? Like, it's just, it's so sad. But that was, you know, whatever. Not, again, very basic cult tactic, I think. But then there was, like I mentioned earlier, the idea of, you know, calling in your twin flame. So what they would do is they would essentially, it sounds like a seance. They would, like, light candles and they would all stand around the table. And they would all chant to, like, call in the one.
Huh.
And then the idea was like, you know, Jeff would kind of let you know who the person is. And so it would kind of be like, you know, for example, like, someone would, like, follow you on Instagram and say, hey, you're really hot. And they'd be like, well, there's your twin flame.
Yeah.
Which is like.
So it didn't have to be somebody that was already part of the group?
Not initially. That does change.
Okay.
But they also, like, really latched onto the idea of the divine feminine and masculine. Like, Jeff was like, there's no way for people to be in a relationship without, like, a masculine and a feminine identity. And he didn't necessarily say queer relationships weren't okay, but we'll get into more of that later. The last thing he did, which I think is really interesting, is they created an eating or diet plan called Divine Dish, which just sounds like Jeff wanted to eat whatever he wanted.
Okay.
The plan was mostly based in carb-heavy meals and lots of red meats. Members reported they gained, like, 70 pounds, and it was, like, a monthly subscription. You had to, like, pay for the recipe and you would make it.
Oh, my gosh.
But, again, another, like, passive income for Jeff to, like, just have money coming in.
Did people complain about gaining weight? Gosh, their cholesterol probably went up and everything too.
Well, like, people would complain, but then Jeff would be like, well, look at Shalia. She eats the diet and she's gained weight and I love her more than I've ever loved her. And,
okay.
You know, like, he used it as, like, this is how you make your twin flame happy, which is, like, or you just eat whatever you want, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
I think I'd get tired of that after a while.
I know. I think I get
tired. I'm a pasta girly and I love bread, but, you know, yeah, that's a lot of...
Well, and even just having red meat every day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's a lot. And then there also were, like, coaches who would, you know, they would be kind of identified within the group, and they would have to watch and pay for all the classes. And Jeff would just tell them, oh, take out a credit card. Just put it on a credit card. Mm-hmm. And, like, whatever. But here's the deal. Like, you're working as a coach. They're, quote, unquote, paying you, but not enough to cover the cost. So you're not actually, like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to say it's, like, I don't know, trafficking or something, but it's just weird, right? Like, you don't have your wages, you don't have a lot of things. And so then they realized that, you know, well, Jeff specifically is all about money. I don't know if you could tell.
Yeah. And Steve is very money driven.
And he realized that if they made the group an official church, they wouldn't have to pay taxes.
Yes.
And they would not have to pay people. So they made the Church of Union, and suddenly the group was very religious, and Jeff started identifying himself as Jesus.
Of course.
He was like, if you look at this picture of Christ, it is exactly what I look like. Hmm. I am Jesus. And everyone was like, okay. And then there were members that questioned it. Like, they were like, I didn't join this, like, religious thing. It's not my thing.
Yeah, they were like, I just wanted to eat a lot of red meat and carbs. And now you're making me call you Jesus.
Right. And then Jeff would just be like, well, you have a block and you need to trust the process.
Wow.
So.
The gaslighting girl.
The gaslighting, the narcissistic personality, the God complex. It's wonderful. So, and, like, a lot of people mentioned that, like, Jeff in general was, like, very angry and would, like, berate people and be very harmful to people, like, in any setting, whether it was, like, a private coaching class or, like, in, like, a big group setting. Mm-hmm. But, like, he would also treat Shalia really badly, like, in front of everybody. And if you called him out, he would make you mirror it back to yourself. So if you said, I think you're kind of delusional, he'd be like, no, you're delusional. Mm-hmm. Like, he would mirror with you. Again, very gaslighting, very, like, abuse tactic.
Yeah.
But once I wrote this down, because I was like, this is terrible. Once someone, like, questioned, because, like, she got paired with kind of a not great human, and she was like, I don't feel comfortable with, like, my twin flame that you say is my twin flame. And he was like, how dare you question your God, you dirty, filthy rat.
Oh, my gosh.
So just, like,
wow,
blatantly being a dick, in my opinion.
Name calling, or asking a question. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be my, okay, dude, like, it's time for me to go.
Right. You would think. But, and the thing was, too, like, Jeff kind of came from this approach that, like, if you weren't upset about something, there was nothing for you to work on. So, like... He wanted you to be upset about things. And, of course, the classes would kind of be like an MLM. Like, you would, like, do it, and then they'd be like, well, you've done as much as you can, but now you can coach.
Yeah, you got to bring in more people.
Exactly. And people would, like, bring up, like, well, hey, like, I kind of want to do writing, or I want to do this or that. They'd be like, no, you have to focus all of your attention to the church.
Yeah, you got to give everything.
Which is, like, silly, because they're not making, like, they're making money, but, like, these people are not making
money. Yeah.
Like, I don't know. It's interesting. So then Jeff decided to create the Mind Alignment Process, or MAP. The idea was that it was to be used on people who had PTSD or trauma.
Which he's convincing everybody they do, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And they actually had Christy Kay, who was, like, a huge military leader, be in charge of MAP. She was she worked in the Pentagon. Like, she's not someone that you would think would be involved in this. But essentially what you would do is you would go in with a practitioner, and they would clear the trauma. But people would go into a hypnotic state. A lot of people mentioned that they felt like there were false memories being placed. And they would also, of course, suggest the classic cut off your family relationships.
Yeah.
Because of your trauma. And so then they would, like, literally go into, like, trauma or PTSD-centered groups and, like, recruit people to join the cult. Gosh. Which is so terrible. Like, could you imagine being, like, a cancer support group or something? And then, like, someone's in here like, we can cure that. Like, what?
Yeah.
No. Absolutely terrible. And they were, like, legitimately, like, applying for grants and treating this like a clinical trial.
Yeah. But I was going to say, you know, I think that's kind of common. I've known somebody that was a part of a cult before, and it was because, you know, she was drinking alcohol as a teenager, and her parents were super religious, and then there is this, you know, cult, but the parents didn't know it was a cult, who said they work with teens with addiction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was kind of a normal teenager going to parties. It wasn't like she was a super, you know, alcoholic or something. But because of the religious piece, the parents trusted them and sent her to them. And it was fully a cult. And she didn't get out of it for like 4 years. But yeah, that idea that we can treat what ails you, so we could treat your trauma, we could treat your addiction. I think that's totally a thing that they use. And mm-hmm. You know, people that are feeling desperate or needing something to cling to, like, yeah, it makes sense why they would want to trust and want to believe that these people are helpful and well-intended.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Like, and especially, like, I think about people who, like, don't want to do, like, super medical things or whatever, and they're like, I want to do things naturally or, you know, whatever, and then something that this seems like a woo-woo group, right? Like,
yeah, instead then going into hospital treatment or something like that.
Yeah, or even like getting psych meds or, yeah, you know, whatever it is. But of course, as I mentioned, this was extremely problematic. And they actually had a patient who was really a member who was struggling a lot mentally. And they told her to mirror herself, and she was like reaching out on the group, like, is anyone dealing with like thoughts of harming himself? Is anyone dealing with thoughts of this, thoughts of that?
Wow.
And she ended up taking her own life. And Jeff painted it as it was her way to get out of having to do the work.
Wow.
So, again, a complete...
So offer her no help.
Yeah.
And then blamed her for not, you know, making the group the priority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So deny... Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is just terrible. Like, yeah, the idea that in the group they were just like, just do the mirror exercise, which if you're already struggling with dark thoughts, like, yeah, turning those dark thoughts on yourself makes it worse. And yeah, then... Yeah, so not good.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of members and family members of members who all kind of banded together, and they decided to talk to Sarah Berman, who was a journalist at Vice. And they created this massive article and published it, which is how we have the documentary we have now. And the members obviously were told not to read them, and they were told that the people in the articles were haters and, you know, that we shouldn't listen to them. And then they literally hired, like, a security department to keep former members from taking other people with them.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
like, they would keep them separate? Like, they couldn't even talk to them?
Yeah. Like, if they were seen contact. Like, it was, like, essentially, like, they were, like, you know, public enemy number one. Wow. In their eyes, right? Which is so silly. These people
just
left. But I'm
glad there was a group of people that were brave enough to go to the media, you know, because mm-hmm. I know that's got to be really scary to try to leave one of these groups.
Oh, totally. And we're going to get into, like, individual people in a minute. I just wanted to talk about it as a whole.
Yeah.
And then talk about, like, the harm that, like, people were doing or experienced. So, of course, Jeff was pissed off. So he decided to sue everybody that was involved in this article for $1 million for defamation. He was very upset about being called a cult leader, calling the people involved abusers and psychos.
In the court case, was he going to proclaim that he was Jesus?
I think so. Yeah.
He was going to go there and be like, I know it says Jeff on the paperwork, but really my name is Jesus. I need all of you to refer to me.
Mom, he's just a mess.
Well, I know, but it's like, if you're going to say it's defamation, you got to convince a whole court of people that you're Jesus.
Right. No, exactly. Anyway, but somehow there were, like, jurisdiction issues with the way that the court case was filed, because Jeff is an idiot. And so the case was just dismissed. It just went away. But then people, because of this, started questioning the process, and, you know, they ended up just changing the rules and were like, okay, so yeah, we said it could be anybody in the world. No, it has to be someone within our group now.
Yeah, I was going to say that makes sense to me just because they want to keep it to people who already drank the Kool-Aid.
Exactly. And so, you know, the only way to have harmonious union is to be with someone that's in the group. And the problem was that if members could only come from the group and the group was mostly women, they were then supposedly supposed to be in queer relationships. And there were queer folks in the group. They were also expected to pursue people. It didn't come off as a bad thing. Like, there was...
Honestly, that surprises me. I thought you were going to say, you know, that men would have multiple wives. That's where I thought it would go.
Oh, girl. It gets crazy. Early in the group, there was a trans woman. There were, like, lesbians. There were whatever. And they were just out in the world looking for someone in the world, right? It didn't have to be within the group. And then it kind of seemed like there became this shift to, like, the real emphasis on, you know, the defined masculine and the defined feminine. And you weren't allowed to, like, dip into both. Like, you weren't allowed to be, like, a butch lesbian. You weren't allowed to be, like, a kind of femme, like, gay man. And the interesting thing was the trans woman in the group, like, they kind of used her as this, like, poster child for the queer side of the Twin Flames. Because they were like, she chose the divine femininity. Like, she is the most feminine of all the feminines.
Oh, really?
Because she chose this. So at first it seemed great until they turned down the God route. Like, that's, you know, once it became a church, it went crazy. But like I said, you weren't allowed to be masc and femme. You had to pick one. Obviously this is very much about power and control, not at all rooted in gender theory. And I love that they had, like, a leading gender, like, theory professor, like, in the documentary talking about this.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, like, they weren't really okay with queer identities in any way, shape, or form. So, like I said, Jeff would kind of identify who your twin flame was. Mm-hmm. And then if it was two women, he'd be like, well, you are the masculine and you are the feminine.
Okay. That's super manipulative, too.
And it started out just as, like, that. But it became a bit more not okay. And I want to stress from the beginning, like, this is, like, such a bad example of, like, how being trans and queer is probably used as, like, a weapon against, like, real, like, trans and queer humans. And, like, I just want to recognize, like, the harm that this has done.
Yeah.
But they did a channeling session, Jeff and Shalia, and they had assigned 20 clients to Twin Flames, and they assigned them either masculine or feminine. They were mostly women. And so the women that were designated as the masculine were told to transition.
Oh my gosh.
And they actually held, like, a secret group that was super abusive and terrible and was, like, just, I mean, Jeff berating these people until they agreed to transition or heal the block that they had with becoming a man.
Wow.
And, you know, the coaches were also a part of this. Like, they had to pressure people to transition. And people were, like, people were changing their hair and all the things.
Did he expect them to do, like, hormone therapy? Or
oh, yeah. All he of expected it. Okay, wow. Surgery. He expected hormones. He expected name change. Everything. And
I mean, that's a lot for the people that, you know, decide to do it on their own. I mean, transition is a huge undertaking, and there's a lot of parts of it that are very difficult. But to have somebody, like, force it upon you.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, it's terrible. And a gender theory professor really affirmed, he's like, maybe there were trans people in the group.
Yeah.
And maybe there were trans people who, because of this, realized they actually are trans, but it's still, like, there's no choice in the matter.
Yeah.
They do not have the choice to transition. They did not go on the journey where they were like, I am a man.
Well, and right? Then, you know, I'm ready for this at this stage of my life.
I'm ready
to do this baby step. I'm ready for this surgery. You know, a lot of times people don't do it all at once. They kind of take steps because it's a lot to put your body through. But, you know, it should be your choice and the timing should be your choice when you feel emotionally ready for all of the change or, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's a lot. That's a lot to go through.
No, exactly. And some members who escaped obviously were like, it was essentially like reverse conversion therapy.
Yeah.
Like we were told, you know, we were told that we had to get top surgery and do the things. And there's at least one person I know that did undergo top surgery from the documentary. I don't know what has changed since the documentary was released 2 years ago. But yeah, just, the queer and trans thing, not good. Not a good look, Jeff. So then Jeff and Shalia plan to, they kind of let out this plan of theirs that they are not only just a 2-twin flame unit, they're a 3-twin flame unit. And the 3rd twin flame is a female child. And so the idea is that they had to go through IVF to make a female embryo because it couldn't be a male embryo. And the baby, essentially the pregnancy was ectopic, so they had to terminate the pregnancy. And rather than just be like, you know, because 20% of pregnancies all end like this, like being like, no, actually, you know, the baby chose to stay on the astral plane. She wasn't ready to come yet.
Oh, wow.
And I want to say a couple things about this baby. She is not allowed to have sexual partners outside of God.
Oh, okay.
And that stresses me out.
Yeah.
If Jeff is saying he's God.
I know. That's very disturbing.
Yeah. They also were, like, abusive with the pregnancy. So if you made, like, members were told if you made a mistake or you were being difficult or whatever, you were hurting the baby. And that's why the baby decided not to come.
Oh, my gosh.
And things like that. They did actually successfully deliver a baby in 2023. So...
But that's so sad because I feel like a lot of women that deal with fertility issues do kind of have moments where they blame themselves and like, what did I do wrong? What could I have done differently? Even though, like you said, 20%, you know, and then miscarriage or, you know, so it's common. It's really tragic and it's so hard to go through. But, you know, so many women do that and blame themselves anyway. So to have somebody feeding into that and blaming you
blaming you for not like being okay with who your twin flame is. Well, you hurt the baby. And the baby died.
Like that you're hurting the gosh, I can't imagine how hard that is when you're already grieving.
I mean, it's like I said, this whole thing is just so fucked up. So after this, they also created the Golden Child Initiative, which is kind of the basic, if twin flames had kids, they would be, the kids would become twin flames in adulthood. And Jeff, you know, firmly believed that if they, you know, if the couples couldn't make a child, Jeff had to call in members who would be able to make a child.
That's what I was going to ask, because like the IVF is super expensive and obviously everybody's given him their money so he can afford it, but the rest of them, if they're in, you know, lesbian relationships or whatever, you know, not all of them can afford IVF if they're giving their money to him.
I know.
Okay, so what do?
So, you know, first they put rules on how much money you had to make in order to have a child. So you had to make $10,000 a month to be able to have a child.
Okay.
And they would just kind of identify men in the group or women in the group who were fertile and would make you have sex with them, essentially.
Wow.
And kind of towards the end of the documentary, you know, Jeff was like, I'm not a cult leader, so we're going to watch documentaries about real cults and, you know, whatever. So he was making them watch, like, all these cult documentaries and then was like, write an essay as to why I'm not a cult leader.
Oh, my gosh. I wonder if any of the documentaries made people go, absolutely, you're a cult member. This sounds all familiar. Or if he only showed people that were, like, monster, like, physically abusive, making you commit harm against others or something that was, like, so over the top that they would be like, oh, yeah, you're not that bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, at this point, they then were planning to basically build a giant commune in Michigan. So that's kind of where the documentary, like, leaves off. But I want to talk about, like, some of the crazy shit that, like, members experienced.
Okay.
So, starting with, like, Keely, Marley, and Colby. So, Keely was living in Oregon. She worked at a grocery store, and she met Colby, who also worked there. She felt like it seemed like a sign they were supposed to be together, like, very instant connection, and, like, it was kind of like a normal courtship situation. Like, he would bring her coffee before her shift and, I don't know, cute things like that. Yeah. And then he kind of suddenly ended it. And so she moved to Massachusetts and was, like, kind of, you know, sad that, you know, she broke up with this guy. And she was like, I just felt like it was a closer connection than, like, a typical one. So then she found out about twin flames. She thought he could be her twin flame. And at the time, like, it seemed like something that was really helping her, like, I don't know, process or whatever. So she actually brought her sister Marley in as well. When she got the book and everything, she started doing the mirror exercise and reached out to Colby. He read the book and took classes and thought it resonated with him as well. And so they moved in together and, like, she moved back to Oregon. Jeff and Shalia, like, pressured them to post an update online as much as possible to, and, like, but to give credit to the Twin Flame universe.
Wow.
For their love story. So it was, like, if they didn't post for, like, a day, they'd get, like, kind of a weird text, like, hey, you haven't been posting.
So even though they found each other before.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Let's just give you the credit, even though you were not a part of our lives when we met.
Right, right. And so they really were, like, you know, kind of one of the few successes, which they're not a success anymore, but, like, they were supposed to be an inspiration for folks in the universe, mm-hmm. and they were made coaches to be coaching other members. And she said, you know, like, in the coaching sessions, they were expected to use the mirror exercise to help people come into harmonious union with themselves and with their twin flame. And there was a lot of pressure that if they didn't get married, they were failures in the symptom, in the system. So, like, they were maybe together for a couple months and were getting pressure to get married. Well, but, I mean, Jeff proposed after, you know, 20 minutes. Yeah. So, you know.
I was going to say, months is a long time for them.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
That does still seem fast to me, but.
Yeah. So they did get married. It was essentially kind of, like, a very, like, small, like, court situation. And, like, they didn't even have a dress or a tux, you know. And she would actually, like, try to talk about, like, relationship struggles she was having, and, like, Jeff would just be like, you're taking this whole process for granted and you're being selfish because you're having problems in your relationship.
Yeah, that's a very narcissistic way to be too. Calling you selfish if you have a need.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I hate this, again, trigger warning, sexual assault. There was a push that the man was entitled to the woman's body, even if it was not consensual. Jeff talked
only with your twin flame or with anybody.
Only with your twin flame.
Okay.
But Jeff,
I mean, but still,
yeah,
not okay.
Jeff talked all the time about the need for the flames to have great sex, and he felt that men needed to have sex every day, and if the man wants it, he gets it. And like, Keely really struggled because she didn't want to have sex all the time, and, like, Colby felt entitled to her body, and so there were times where, like, you know, she, you know, would have sex with her partner, and, you know, it was borderline, like, spousal rape, right? Like, it's just not okay. And she felt a lot of shame and guilt around her block, and, like, when she tried to bring it up, Jeff would be like, no, you're being selfish.
Yeah, because, I mean, well, the shaming, you know, it's like if somebody's telling you over and over and over again, you know, that you're selfish or ungrateful or whatever, like, you know, I just feel like that becomes a part of your narrative. And if you don't have anybody else that's countering that for you, helping you see a different side.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to internalize all that stuff. So when he wants you to internalize all of it, so.
Yeah, exactly. So she had, like, because she became a coach, she had this, like, master drive with all of the coaching sessions, the YouTube videos, events, secret meetings, classes. And so she had a lot of the data. She still had it, like, at the time of the documentary and was like, I could use this. Like, you can tell it's, like, not great.
Yeah.
But she was nominated as the new CEO of the Twin Flames universe. And the idea was that she would be the face, so Jeff and Shalia didn't have to pay taxes. on the whole business. She realized he was a cult leader because she wrote that paper that Jeff told her to write and could not find a single example as to why Jeff was not a cult leader.
Yeah.
So she was able to escape with Colby, and she tried to go get her sister. And of course, there's a lot of healing there, and Marley and Keely, the sisters, are not in contact, and the relationship with Colby has ended. So Marley's is, you know, not as great. So Marley was 19 when she was recruited to the Twin Flame universe.
Okay.
They did a call-in session where they, like, sat around the table, very seancey, and the next day she was sent a song by a stranger on Facebook. Jeff was like, read the lyrics out loud, and the lyrics were like, I love you, and you're amazing, and you're the most perfect human, and da-da-da. And it was, like, kind of creepy, you know, like, this dude just sent her the song. But then he was like, or Jeff was like, well, clearly, this is your twin flame. And she even said, she was like, the guy looked kind of creepy. I didn't like him. Like, I didn't want him. And the guy apparently was 11 years older than her with no job. And he had a criminal history and severe mental health issues.
I'd be like, I'd like to find my twin flame, but I have standards.
Right.
My bar is a little higher than that.
And she brought up her concerns and was gaslit and told to post to make her relationship look great. She was told to move to Utah to be with him.
Wow.
She did. The guy was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder and was not in treatment.
Wow.
She asked, like, how to heal these issues, and Jeff said it was her fault and that she needed to be more supportive of her partner.
Oh, my gosh.
The situation was, like, physically abusive, obviously. And then she was put in MAP to heal. And then eventually the sisters were told to end their bonds to focus on their relationships with the twin flames.
Wow.
So that's why, you know, when Keely escaped, she ran and went to go get her sister.
So when you have real trauma, they still send you to MAP, but then they make you stay and cut off your relationship with people who are actually healthy people.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah. And she was still in the relationship until Keely went and rescued her.
Wow.
Another example is a person named Elle. You know, she was, like, very into music, kind of thought about becoming a DJ, and she met a dude at Burning Man, and the connection was amazing, and so she kind of moved out to the Bay Area to be with him. She got a severe spinal injury from a car accident, and the partner broke up with her, so she turned to spirituality and found the Twin Flame Facebook page. Jeff and Shalia convinced her that X was her twin flame, and she was, like, a little hesitant, but she was like, well, maybe, like, it was just my injury, and he was, like, weirded out, but, like, you know, whatever. Which, if your man won't stand by you when you're going through shit, don't stand with the man. Like, that's just my opinion.
Yeah.
There was an altercation with the ex at his house. It was kind of like she was hanging out with his roommate because they were friends, and then the ex came in and was like, why are you in my house? Like, this is inappropriate, da-da-da-da. And he filed a restraining order against her.
Oh, wow.
And she went to Jeff and was like, hey, like, this isn't cool. Like, I'm not going to pursue him anymore. And he was like, well, restraining orders don't exist. He's just in denial. He's just in denial.
Wow.
And so, you know.
So really, he's going to go to jail? Oh, my gosh.
So he was like, if you heal yourself, you can heal the relationship. And so, I mean, it's essentially stalk the guy till he loves you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So she, you know, would text him every couple of days, and the ex would try to set boundaries, and they would tell her that, you know. And then she would, like, go back to Jeff and Shalia, and they'd be like, you need to discipline yourself to get him back. And, of course, the ex was reporting every call, every encounter, every text, everything to the police. And then there was one night where it really genuinely sounded like an accident. She went out dancing, and the ex was there, and he had her arrested because he thought she followed him. Because at this point, she's been stalking him, essentially. Yeah. And she was coached that her family was demonic and evil, and so she couldn't call her family, and she didn't know how to call Jeff, and she didn't know who else to call. So she just sat in jail and did the mirror exercise. She was in jail for a month before she eventually called her parents, and they spent a shit ton of money to get her out. But then at this point she was living at home and still a part of the universe. Like, this wasn't enough for her to get out. Jeff essentially, in those meetings, was trying to get her to admit that she was stalking, but reiterated that she was a spiritual master and was doing something so intense to be with her twin flame. And he would do this, like, in classes with everybody. Like, you need to be like Elle. Like, look at what she's doing to get her twin flame. And so they essentially, like, removed her from the company, and she had to do extreme coaching sessions because she was not being compliant with them. And then they basically, like, removed her entirely, like, kicked her out of the Facebook group, blocked her, everything. And so she walked away, but she still had access to some of the accounts because she was a coach. And so she would fuck with them. Like, she would just kind of, like, I don't know, write, like, change, like, ads or something to make them silly. I don't know. Just, like, little things like that.
I would do that, too. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. And there was also another member at this time that Elle was close with, and she was told to go after her ex-husband, who was married and having a baby with someone else. And she was like, what? But, you know.
Next for a reason, so.
Right. And she felt like there was no one else out there for her, so she kept pushing for it, but she also got out.
Okay.
But, you know, essentially Jeff was just saying, like, pursue your twin flame at all costs. So there's, like, one more example, and it's Angie. And Angie met a man at work who was, like, sending her explicit photos and texts and was, like, clearly into her. And she was kind of like, I mean, you're kind of cute, you know, whatever. And Jeff was like, this guy's your twin flame. You're destined to be with him. And the guy was initially...
So it was just, like, any man that reached out to a woman, it was like, that's automatically your twin flame.
Yes.
Like, nobody's vetted. It's just like, oh, that guy's sending you dick pics. He's your twin flame.
Exactly.
Wow.
So Jeff... You know, so the guy initially was interested in her, but then they, like, I guess, went some, like, on a little romantic getaway, and, like, they kissed, and he was like, this is awkward. I feel like you're, like, my best friend or my sister. Like, let's just keep this platonic. And, you know, she was, like, sad, but she used the mirror exercise to stay strong, and then she became, like, the top salesperson with the Twin Flames universe. But she was, like, they were kind of shaming her because, like, her twin flame was in a relationship with someone else. And they said that she was lacking femininity and taking his masculinity away from him.
Oh, wow.
So she started presenting super ultra feminine. They convinced her to reach out to him, and he would call her delusional and things. And then they actually shunned her for a bit after she brought up her concerns about, like, this not being, like, a healthy situation.
Yeah.
And then they actually asked her to let go of her twin flame and assigned her a new one. And she was told that her twin flame is a woman and she is to be masculine. So she was told she was a man.
So she went from hyper-feminine to now you gotta, like, transition to be a man.
Yeah. And she did not get as far as surgery. I do think she did do hormones. I'm not positive. But, you know, she was told she was a man, she resisted, but was essentially told there's no way out. Her partner that she was assigned left the group and was like, fuck that. And then they actually gave her extra pressure to change her name and pronouns.
Wow.
They, like, were like, you have to be a man now. And so she agreed and knew that she had to conform, but she obviously didn't like it. She liked being her, like, femme queer self. And she felt like she was forced to be there, she was coerced to transition, and she was afraid of retaliation. But she met Shanice, who was another member. They developed a really close relationship, and they, you know, were added to the board of the directors. And then Jeff and Shalia decided they were taking 50% of the coach's income.
Wow, that's a lot.
So both of them left.
Yeah, I would leave too. Damn, that's a lot.
But that was a lot of words, but I do want to say the group is still up and running. Please run. This is not rooted in science or anything at all. And obviously they are working with lawyers and things to try to get it shut down as a cult, but it's really hard to prove that a cult is a cult.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's the Twin Flames universe.
Holy cow. Yeah, I haven't watched the documentary yet, but... Yeah, I mean, it seems like a lot of the common tactics and everything, but, yeah, I mean, they put people through some things. I'm like, the reverse conversion therapy thing is interesting. I've never heard of a cult doing that before.
Yeah, like the idea that you're trans now.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Yeah, that's a new thing for me to hear, but yeah, it's sad that it's still up and running.
Yeah. No, it's definitely just like such a fucked up group. And like I'm glad that they obviously did the documentary so people know about it. And
yeah, well, I'm hoping that'll help people stay away, but it's hard because the people that are still in it probably won't get to see it, you know?
Right, yeah, yeah. Exactly. So, anyway, that's my story.
That's a good story. I mean, disturbing, but interesting. Yeah.
Disturbing, but interesting, for sure. But anyway, friends, thanks for listening. If you like this episode, you can like, subscribe, rate it 5 stars wherever you got your podcast. You could also follow us on Instagram at WhatTheLPod. You can also follow our Patreon, which if you go to patreon.com and you search WhatTheLPodcast, we will pop right up. And then if you have any personal stories or you just want to reach out to us, anything like that, we do have an email account you can reach out to us at, which is WhatTheLPod@gmail.com. And outside of that, Mama, I just want to say I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, too.
And we appreciate you, friends. Bye.
Bye-bye.